The crisis facing the voluntary community sector didn't arrive suddenly, nor was it inevitable. It's the product of decisions taken and decisions not taken over many years. But to understand how we reached this point, we need to be clear about what previously worked, why it worked, and what now has been lost. For decades, European structural funds, particularly the European Social Fund and the European Regional Development Fund, provided stable, strategic investment in Northern Ireland's communities. They worked because the Northern Ireland Executive treated them as core policy instruments, not as discretionary add-ons. Executive match funding wasn't a courtesy. It was a statement of intent, one that said tackling economic inactivity, supporting people into work, addressing inequality and strengthening communities were central priorities of devolved government. That match funding ensured three critical things. First, scale. European funding came in at a level that was meaningful because it was matched locally. Second, stability. Organisations could plan across programme cycles, retain skilled staff and build trusted relationships with participants. And third, integration. Programmes were embedded in local strategies for employability, skills, disability inclusion and regeneration. And that's why those programmes delivered results, particularly in places like Foyle, my own constituency, where economic inactivity is deeply entrenched and driven by disability, long-term ill health and caring responsibilities. What replaced that model was something very different. Brexit resulted in the loss of EU funding, especially for groups that are most marginalised in society. And the parties that championed Brexit must bear some responsibility for that and for where we are today. But since then, we've seen a succession of schemes. First, the Shared Prosperity Fund, and now the Local Growth Fund, that lack those three qualities: scale, stability and integration. Most critically, the executive match funding principle has disappeared. Savings arising from the end of European structural funds have not been reinvested in a way that protects the delivery capacity that those funds supported. Instead of being treated as foundational, voluntary and community sector programmes have been left exposed, dependent on short-term, externally designed schemes with very limited local flexibility. And that failure of continuity matters because the Local Growth Fund, as currently structured, is not just smaller in revenue terms, it's fundamentally misdesigned for Northern Ireland. A 70-30 capital-to-resource split might suit regions where growth challenges are infrastructure-led, but our challenge is people-led. Capital funding doesn't support a person with a disability into sustained employment. It doesn't address trauma-related barriers. It doesn't keep skilled employability staff in place. And yet, that is the funding model now being imposed. And ministers have already acknowledged key elements of this problem. The finance minister has put it in record that the executive cannot rebalance that capital resource split and that the resource element will be delivered directly by Westminster in 2026-27. At the same time, we're told that delivery responsibilities will later revert to departments here, meaning the executive will inherit the consequences of a model that it didn't design. But the executive has also failed to take any responsibility for a problem that we knew was coming. Yes, what the UK government has done is indefensible, but ministers here have abandoned their responsibility to the thousands of people supported by these projects and organisations. That places an even greater responsibility on the executive to assess and mitigate the impact now. But as usual, when a crisis points to a collective responsibility for the executive, the response is a collective silence. Assurances to the sector have been paper thin. As far back as January 2025, the then Finance Minister agreed to set up a cross-departmental group to identify the risks coming forward from the transition. But we don't know if this group even got off the ground. If it did, it was in secret, with no collaboration or consultation with the community and voluntary sector. Despite accepting that job losses and service reductions are inevitable, departments have not produced any clear or published analysis of the impact that this funding transition will have on the voluntary community sector's ability to continue delivering support. That's not my interpretation. It's the clear implication of answers already given in this House and to committees. We're effectively being told that the full impact can't be assessed while organisations are already issuing redundancy notices. That is not an evidence-based approach. It's policy-making by blindfold. Let me bring this back to Foyle, because these decisions have a real-world impact. In my constituency, the voluntary community sector carries much of the weight of tackling economic inactivity. Action Mental Health's Northwest provision, Youth Start Delivery Partners, BITES, women-focused employability and confidence programmes, and community-based support organisations from the bog side to the waterside aren't peripheral, they're central. These organisations work with people who don't transition neatly between mainstream programmes, people with learning disabilities, people managing long-term mental health conditions, women returning to the labour market after prolonged care responsibilities, and young people whose barriers can't be addressed by short-term interventions. Yet, there is no published assessment setting out which of these services can survive the funding reduction, what staffing capacity will be lost, or how the loss of that provision will affect economic inactivity rates locally, not to mention vulnerable individuals. Instead, the executive acknowledges the problem, but appears to be willing to proceed without modelling its impact. In contrast, under ESF, the executive understood that withdrawing match funding would collapse delivery, so it didn't do so. Under current arrangements, however, the withdrawal has happened by default, not through decision, but through omission. This motion, isn't asking for charity. It's asking for restoration of a principle that previously guided policy, that if we rely on the voluntary and community sector to deliver core outcomes, then we fund it accordingly. Ring-fencing funding within the multi-year budget isn't radical. It would achieve predictability, continuity and accountability. And let's be honest about the alternative. If we allow experienced staff to leave, services to close and community trust to dissipate, those capacities won't be easily rebuilt. The costs will simply reappear elsewhere, in mental health services, in long-term unemployment, in poverty statistics, and in the very economic inactivity figures the executive says it wants to reduce. That's not fiscal responsibility, it's just cost shifting. The question facing the executive is fairly straightforward. If we knew under European funding that match funding was essential to delivery, why is its disappearance now being treated as acceptable? If departments can't currently assess the impact on service delivery here, why is it content to proceed regardless? And if we accept that Westminster will not adjust the funding profile in the short term, what's the executive's plan to prevent permanent damage to the sector that it depends upon, that we all depend upon? This motion asks the executive to stop managing decline and start managing risk proactively and strategically. We know what worked, we know what's being lost, and we still have an opportunity to act. I urge members to support the motion, and I urge the executive to re-establish the principle that made European structural funds so effective here. Long-term commitment matched by deliberate political choice. The voluntary and community sector here depend on it and deserve no less.